What's up, everybody? Scale Riders, episode 5. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Edgar Vergara, also known as 65 Lokes. I hope everybody had a good week and weekend. This is the Sunday wrap-up for me. Today was a fun day. Got to hang out with my friend Rudy, also known as Candy's Chrome and Beauties on Instagram. And I tagged along with them. We went out to Pegasus this morning and spent a pretty good amount of time there. We met up with Joe Altered Works, who I had on the show last episode from last week. And we got to meet up. He got to show us around Pegasus, which was nice. He took us to some areas in the building where not a lot of people get to go. We got to see a lot of stuff behind the scenes, which was nice. We also got to check out the back in the track with where they have the RC cars. They have this huge dirt track, and I had never gone back there. I had seen videos and pictures of it, but I've never gone to the back. So that was my first time going. It was a nice thing to see, and I was just tripping out on how fast those things go now. But it was fun day. We also had Mario Terror Chaos come out, and he's one of the persons who helped design the Scale Riders website. So if you haven't visited the website yet, it's scaleriders.com, and you get to see just different articles and things that Mario and myself are putting together, and along with some more projects that are going to be coming down the pipeline that we got in store for the website. So we both, I took my camera, he brought his, so we both were, you know, he was showing me the ropes behind the Nikon, which was cool. We had Joe bust out with his cars so we can take pictures of his model cars there at the store. Mario as well brought a couple of pieces that he created, some beautiful cars that we also were taking pictures of. And we, we got to document things throughout the store, some of the items they have on the inventory for sale. And Pegasus, it's out in Montclair. Many people who live outside of California who are planning to come to California, I would recommend to stop by Pegasus to check it out. We also have another hobby shop that I go to a lot is the Burbank House of Hobbies. Both of those shops are like my favorite shops I like going to. Pegasus, though, you will find a lot of things. They have a lot of stuff. You might find stuff you've been looking for and haven't come across it. They'll have it there. I know a lot of people buy their wheels, the rims. I mean, they have so many wheels and rims. It's crazy. And I tripped on today because while we were looking at everything, Mario was like, hey, is there anything you're looking for as far as paint? And I was like, nah, like, I'm cool, you know. I think I got enough paint as is. And he's like, you don't need House of Color? I'm like, House of Color? What are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, they have it here. And I was like, what? They sell House of Color here? I had no idea. And they did have, 1 ounce bottles with House of Color paint. So I didn't even know this, but for those who live close or near that area, now you know, they got them there. So if you can't make it all the way to Anaheim to Coast Airbrush, you can just hit up Pegasus and pick up some paint there. But it was cool. I ended up picking up some glue that I'm running low on, some of the CA glue with the accelerator that I talked about on last week's episode. I needed a re-up. I picked that up, as well as a couple of sets of rims. These rims that were produced many years ago, but were never released until now. And they are available. They're about $4 a set. And I got a couple sets. You know, I'm going to see what I'm going to do as far as getting them chrome plated. Or maybe just spraying Molotov chrome on them just to be able to make them, you know, shine, bring them to life, and possibly use them on some upcoming builds that I have in the works. So it was nice. I didn't think we were going to be there for that long. I thought we were just going to hang out for a couple hours and just, you know, be on our way. But we were actually there for, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. We were there for a while. We were just talking with Joe and Mario and also the owner of Pegasus. So it was nice. It was very active. A lot of people go there, you know. So it's always neat to see what people are picking up, you know. And it's crazy. Like, you see people buying stuff, it motivates you to want to go buy some stuff too, you know. But that's a hobby shop, very large hobby shop. I recommend for listeners to go to that have never been there. You know, that's definitely a spot that you need to go to. On our way out, we ended up stopping by Burbank. And we didn't go to Burbank House of Hobbies, which we normally do when we're there. I mean, by the time we were out there, since we had spent so much time in Pegasus, the other store was already closed. So we had gotten an invite from Armando. He was, like, working on a car. So he's like, hey, how about if you guys want, cruise through, let's hang out. So we ended up going out there with Rudy, and he's showing us some of the new works, some new builds he has going on. I was able to document with my camera, taking as many pictures as I could of the projects, and I need to work the pictures with Photoshop just so I can add the logo and bring some light to it, and in this way I can start to post these soon on the website. And we also, what was interesting, he showed us some hoppers that he created many years ago, back in the 90s. And if you go to his Instagram, it's at Armando Flores 1032. There's he had posted video clip of one of his hoppers, a 65 Impala, just hopping away, you know. It's very, very interesting thing to see. And the name of the car was Tricks of Fire. And this car was also featured on the Lowrider Bicycle magazine. And he has video footage from the time when that car was active. And it's a nice piece of history that he still has to this day. I keep telling him, you need to, like, you know, refurbish this car, bring it back. You need to, I think a lot of people would get a kick out of seeing this car back again in the scene. And there's just a lot of, ingenuity that went into it when you see it. I managed to get a lot of pictures of that too. The inner works of the 65, and it's a trip when you see it. You're just like, oh my God, like, there was so much work, so much that went into this. And, you know, at that time, I mean, he was competing with hoppers. There was a lot of other competitors as well. You know, everyone has their own style, which is nice. When it comes down to competing. But when I would see this model, I was just tripping out, because it also, when it would lock up, there's like scenes in the video where it shows the car even sparking. You know, like, that's what it was called, the Tricks of Fire. So emulating like fire underneath, sparking from the vehicle. And I mean, this thing would just hop pretty high. So I was like bugging Armando, like, hey, do you have the originals of this? Like, this footage, you know, can I obtain them? So hopefully, I did obtain them. I have them. So hopefully soon I'll share them with you guys as well on the Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. So that way you guys can also see them firsthand on there. And this is like footage from back in the early 90s. And it's, I think it's something that you guys will like. I mean, I like watching it, and it had a lot of response when he had posted it online on Instagram. So I definitely think you guys will like it as well. I also wanted to let everybody know on Facebook, for everyone who uses Facebook, and I started a Scale Riders private group. It's called Scale Feeder. And if you're on Facebook, you know, and you want to share your model cars, please, you know, feel free to search it and request to join the group. And I set up like a couple questions to answer, but it's called Scale Feeder, and it's a private group on Facebook. So I know there's already, you know, other car model groups out there, and I just wanted to have my own. I mean, I like participating in the other groups showing cars, and I like looking at other people's work as well, because you definitely get inspiration from these groups, and you also get to meet other people and build relationships from there. But I was, you know, I felt like I need to have one as well for the Scale Riders community. And this way, you know, we could just add on to the content and have more content out there. Because I know once you're in one group, trust me, you're going to be in so many other groups. It just opens up more doors. And I know there's so many people on Facebook, you know, and not everybody's on every group, but for the most part, I try to join as many groups as I can on there to see some work and also to post up on stuff. But on there, it is Scale Feeder, and it's on Facebook. I've also been getting hit up by some people on Instagram, you know, asking me to feature their car on there. And if you want to send me photos of your vehicles, please feel free to send those photos to me at my email. It's a support@scaleriders.com. I'd recommend to send them there. Sometimes I get hit up, like, as far as like on the direct message on Instagram, where I'll be sent a picture. The only thing about the Instagram I've noticed is that it tends to kind of pixelate it downsizes the picture. So if I screenshot that, it's not going to be the resolution of it. A lot of it gets thrown out. It's best to, if you have the original, just to email it, you know, that way I can get it like the full size and the pixelation, everything is there. So the resolution is all there. So this way it doesn't come out all blocky and pixelated, is something we can't use. And I also want to recommend, when taking photos of your projects, I'd recommend to use a whiteboard. You could get a couple of these foam boards, these whiteboards, at pretty much any craft store. I've even seen them at Dollar Tree for $1. And you just need a couple boards, one to lay on the floor and another one behind it. That way it covers up anything, any clutter, mess, anything that's in the background. Just so the shots look a lot cleaner. It's like every time I look at a picture of a car, a lot of the times the first thing I look at is like what stands out the most is like if there's stuff behind it. You know, so I've seen pictures. I mean, I do it too. Like I take a quick picture of a car and then I'll have like stuff in the background. And then when I look back at it, I'm kind of like, ugh, like everything in the back pops out. So I start to see like, damn, what's that in the background? Instead of looking and focusing on the car. So this way, when you have everything clean, you know, especially with the white board on the floor and in the back, it makes the model car pop more. So your divided attention is focusing more on the model car as opposed to what's in the background. And in this way, it also makes your car look, you know, more like a real car, like a professional photo shoot, you know, conducted by like Lowrider or something. And the lighting, the lighting's also a big thing. Don't get me wrong, these are things that I'm learning myself right now with my camera. You know, with your phone, it's easy to take pictures. The phones are very user friendly and they help with that. But I noticed like with the digital camera that I've been taking pictures, you know, when it's either too dark, it's hard to like zoom in and lock into something just because of the lighting. But little by little, I'm starting to get the ball rolling with that. It's been fun. I mean, I like it. And it's like, I could see a lot of stuff. Once I get it going, I'm going to get like super into that thing. And I mean, I'm going to want to like travel to go to as many people I can link up with that build models. That way I can document and take pictures of your cars and feature them on Scale Riders. So for those that live, you know, pretty far away from me, out of state or out of the country, and you want to submit photos of your car, those are like some things I would recommend. You know, just make sure like lighting's cool, and there's a use a white floor and background. And this way, the shots come out cleaner, crisp. Everything just pops more with your car. And send multiple, like, different angle shots. That also helps a lot. This way, you know, to pick out the best shot that represents the car. Because it's all about the angles, you know. You got to get that right angle. And it's going to do a lot of justice to your car. And a lot of people are going to love it. So that's one thing there. I also wanted to let everybody know that May 6th, there is going to be a model car contest. And this contest is being brought to you by Art Lasky. This is going to be the SoCal NNL 13. And this is going to be on May 6th. In Chatsworth, California. And the the show is from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is going to be my first time going. I haven't gone, like, ever, like, to this show in particular here in SoCal. I did go in January to the one up north in Santa Clara. That was the NNL West. But this is the SoCal NNL 13. So it's closer to home, kind of in my backyard. About an hour away, but it is closer to a lot of people who live in the Valley, LA, or even not that far for people who live in the Inland Empire. But it's a show that our friend Art Lasky is throwing, and also with Terra Chaos and myself, we are sponsoring an award for the Tuner and Drift category. So it's first time we're doing this, and we do have thoughts of sponsoring more awards in the future for other model car contests, but this one here we are super excited about, not only because we're sponsoring it, but it's just you know, we want model shows to pop off all the time, and we want to come through and participate. And I am going to be bringing out some models, model cars for the show. I think I'm going to bring them out more to showcase as opposed to entering them for the contest. I just want to be able to work on some stuff, some like quick builds, something I can have ready by May 6th, and to showcase more the paint. So it's most likely going to be more of a curbside, and I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this. There will be vendors selling model kits for those of you who are looking for stuff. Would recommend, if you do want to enter the contest, you can. And I believe the, you know, you just show up that day. Just show up early in the morning. Bring the cars you want to bring. And I'm not sure if they're going to have a hopping contest. I'm not sure about that. But for those that do the hoppers, just show up, bring them. And I mean, if they're not doing anything, just bust them out and like showcase. You know, people like seeing that. So, you know, you'll get people asking you questions. How do you do this? How do you do that? Or can I see the bottom? You know, so definitely highly recommend to check that out. And, you know, just bring your models. Even if you don't plan on entering, at least bring them to show them. Because I know I'm going to want to see them. And people are going to see them, want to see them too. So we're going to be with Mario Terracast. We're going to be doing event coverage. So we'll be photographing as many model cars as we can that day. This way we can show the coverage to our listeners of, you know, all the models are going to be coming out. And I'm going to try to get Art Lasky to get on the show as well. I definitely want to get him on. I want, you know, I want to introduce him and have him on here. Because he's someone who's very passionate about model building. He's been doing it for a long time. And he is doing a lot on his end, on his behalf, to keep this going. I mean, I met him last year in December. And you could just tell, you know, from meeting him that he's a really nice, cool guy. And he's very passionate about this. So that's someone who I definitely want to get him on to the show. And I'll keep you guys posted. So I just need to get in contact with him soon to let him know and invite him. Last time I talked to him was at the Peterson show in L.A. He was there. So I got to see him there, chatted for a bit. And before that, he was also up north at the NNL West show. So I've been seeing him here and there at the shows, but I want to get him on the Scale Riders podcast so we can, you know, have him talk more in depth about the upcoming show for May 6th. That's going to be in Chatsworth. So those that are going to enter, you know, I know for sure there's going to be lowriders for sure, muscle cars, classic cars, like the Tuner Drift. I think this is the first time they're actually doing this. And so there's going to be a lot of categories. And I'm sure there's going to be categories for the kids as well. I think, yeah, there is actually. Now that I think of it, I think the juniors, that one is being sponsored by Down to Scale. I know Joe today, when we were talking to each other, he was saying that he is sponsoring the award for best detail. And so it's cool, like, just knowing that a lot of people are going to be coming through to support this. Also, there is going to be a Masterpieces presentation there at the show. And it's going to be by Armando. And it's pretty cool. He was when we went to his house, he was about to get started working on this. What he's gonna present is gonna be the San Fernando Mission Boulevard. You know, last year he presented the Whittier Boulevard, and he wants to do another presentation. You know, he wants to do the San Fernando Mission Boulevard. This is something that he got to witness many years back in the 70s with the lowrider scene. So this is something of a vision of the past that he wants to bring to this show. So that way people who are there can check it out. And I mean, I'm excited. I want to see it. And it's crazy because it's like when he tells me, this is what I'm going to do. And then, you know, right away in my head, I'm going like, how or what? How are you going to do it? Like, but you only have enough time. Like, the time's coming up. Like, how are you going to do it? And it's like, he already has like the plan. He'll just lay it out, you know. It's like, oh, all I need to do is this, this, and this, and this. And then it's like that picture gets painted now in your head. And you're like, oh, okay. And you're like, damn, that's cool. And then you see it, and then you see it happen, and it's there in front of you, and you just can't believe it. You're like, what the heck? That's crazy. So I can't wait to see that. I'm excited to see that coming up. And also, I just got the Scalewriters plaque stickers. And I got those earlier in the week, which I was very happy about getting. And I just want to thank the people who have been buying them from the Scalewriter store. Right now we have stickers. I mean, I've always wanted to do stickers, but I'm putting them up because I want to, you know, I want to spread the word. And it's like, I appreciate people are going out of the way. They're supporting and they're buying. But what I want, my plan is that eventually I'm going to invest more money into more stickers and more stickers. And it's just going to like, at some point, I just want to have a bunch of different stickers that everybody can get. And this way, you know, you can stick them up or whatever, like on your toolbox, anywhere, like anything. And there's other stuff I want to do too, but it's something that it takes time. I can't just hit everybody off with a bunch of stuff. No. It's gotta, you know, it takes time. Like, you know, I'm a fan of stickers. I love stickers. I collect stickers. Like, I have a huge box full of stickers from different stuff and that I've collected over the years. And I was happy with the first sticker. Now I just came out with the second sticker design. So there is going to be more that are going to be coming down the pipeline soon. And I hope to have a lot of these new designs that I had just ordered by the time of May 6th for the show to have them out. I'm also going to be getting some lapel pins. Those are already in process. The green light, it's a go on those. And sometime in late April, I should have them in hand. So those little lapel pins, I'm only getting 100 made. And they are going to be limited, and I'm not going to press those again ever. Like, I'm just doing one run of 100. They're all going to be numbered on the back card that it comes with. And, you know, if people like them, I'll do more pins, but a different design. I'll do something else. And these pins, you know, you can wear them on your jacket, a sweater, put them on your backpack. You know, you could even just lay it next to your model, you know. But this is like a badge, kind of like just, you know, showing like support for the Scalewriters community. And it's just, I don't know, just something to kind of have fun with. I have various badges from stuff too. When I used to be into different types of music, and you know, you'd go to like a punk show, you get a pin. You go to like a hip hop show, oh damn, they got pins here too, getting a pin. You know, you go to like some indie record shops and they got various pins, and you're like, man, I got like a collection of pins. But it's just like an extra thing that I wanted to throw up there, so we have. But I mean, I always get like friends or people tell me, why don't you make shirts or this and that, and I don't know. It if people want shirts, I guess I can get some shirts done, but I don't know. I'm not really thinking too much like on that, but we'll see down the road. And I also wanted to talk about a tip of the day or of the week. But one thing I wanted to say is, well, this isn't something that I came up with. I actually saw this on YouTube, but it was something that I saw that I thought, oh, that comes in, that will come in handy. And this was some years back, maybe three years ago when I seen this. And what was going on is, well, what the tip is, you need a marker, black marker, sanding stick, and the body of your model car. So, you know, on the model cars, there's all these like mold lines that appear on the body when the body's being constructed in the factory and whatnot. And sometimes you just get different lines coming across the body that you're like, oh, we need to get rid of these. Or let's say you want to get rid of the emblems or the door handles. You want to shave all that off. And you know that the styrene is just white, like a bright white. So what you do with your marker, what I would recommend from what I saw on the video, and this channel that I saw is the Scale Modeling channel. It's on YouTube. So if you haven't checked that out, please check out the Scale Modeling channel. So you get your marker, and you pretty much just mark, you know, over your emblems if you want to shave those off, your panel lines, you know, anything you want to take off your mold lines, you just run your marker over the the flash, like anything, the extra styrene that you want to get rid of. And then from there, you just sand it with your sanding stick pretty much until you rub off the black ink. So once you start sanding, you're going to notice that now, you know, all the black from the marker is going away. And once it's completely off, now you'll see that, you know, your objective is like there. You got rid of the mold line. Everything's nice and smooth in that area, and you don't have to, you know, you don't have to be kind of guessing. Like, it's a nice way to kind of know where you're at. That way you don't miss anything. So the first thing you do is, you know, you get your body, you inspection it under a light. You really see what you need to get rid of, and you know, mark it up with your marker and then sand that thing away. Once you get everything, you know, off, you then you can like wet sand. But I probably recommend if you have like a 400 grit or 320, you can like a sanding stick, just go over and sand over that area, and you'll get rid of that. And from there, you know, you just start moving your way up to 600, 1100, get it nice and smooth. Finally, just have it out, you know, give it a bath. Put some, I end up using the soap that we use to wash our dishes, some dish soap, into the water. And I leave the model body and parts in there, you know, get a nice wash, and then just wet sand it. And I just let it chill overnight. I mean, I kind of like doing it in the afternoon and then just leave it overnight. And then the next day, pour all the water on everything. And, you know, after you scuffed it, when you were sanding it, it's like everything's all dull. It's not all shiny or slippery. It's all dull, and it's ready for primer. So just make sure before you, you know, you get ahead of yourself, just kind of see, like, look at the body and just try to find the imperfections of the body and try to really see what you want to get rid of and what you don't. Like, if there's areas that you're like, you know what, I'm going to take off that emblem because maybe you don't want to put the bare metal foil over it because it's too small or it just looks too hard to do. Or maybe you're just doing a custom car where you want to shave the door handles and you want to make it look very clean. You know, you really just got to think about what you're trying to do, what you're trying to go for on there. And just do research. Try to see, get some references from real life cars that are out there, and you'll get some ideas from there. So I just want to, that'll be the tip of the day. And I also want to let you guys know that I got my mixing board. Finally, that was one of the last components that I needed in order for me to be able to have a live guest on the show, or more like just the one-on-one conversation that I can get with them. And finally got my mixing board, hooked everything up. One of my good friends, his name's Randall, I would, you know, be calling him like, hey, like, let's test this out. Let's try to record, you know, and we're just going back and forth. And it was, before I got the mixing board, it was just a lot of troubleshooting, going back and forth. I was trying to do it a different way and it wasn't working. And now that I have the mixing board, it works. Everything's fine. Got everything hooked up. And we finally, you know, we're going to have him today on the show. He is going to be the first guest as far as us talking back and forth, which is cool, more of the interaction. And I mean, it's just going to, from here going forward, I just know that there's going to be more guests that I want to get on. And if there's someone that you recommend me to interview that's a model builder in the community, please, like, get me in contact with them. Find a way. You know, I would like to interview them, have them on, and give some insight of their thoughts of scale model building, where it's at now, and where they see it going forward in the future. And also, it's always nice to hear stories of the past as well, and their childhood, you know, like, as far as, like, them building the first time they built their first model and everything. So those are always neat stories I always like to hear. So definitely I'll be having more guests on the show. So without no further ado, I would like to introduce my homie Randall. And I hope you enjoy the interview or conversation here on the show. All right, let's do this. What's up, Randall? How you doing today?
All right, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good, man. I'm very happy to have you on the show. It's cool, man, because it's like I've been wanting to have someone live, like, so we can have a live conversation during the recordings. And finally, I was able to get my mixing board and just everything all connected. And I mean, prior to this recording, I know I had been calling you and we've been trying to set this up, doing a sound check, trial and error, trying to get everything going. And we finally got it going. So it just made sense. Like, you know what? Since you've been helping me with all this stuff, I want you to be like the first guest on the show where we're doing this live interview. So I want to thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, man. So how you doing? How you been?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. It was a long day today, but it was nice. It was awesome. It would have been cool if you would have been able to come through, but for the next one.
Yeah, for sure. We'll do it next time.
Yeah. So, so on today's episode, you know, I wanted to talk about storage. I mean, I know we both have, you know, we're both into the hobby. And we're also into other hobbies, and we collect stuff, like, you know, everything. Whether it's records, whether you collect comic books, you know, model car kits, 1/12 inch scale figures, you know, anything. Books, okay. Like DVDs. But when it comes down to models, I notice, like, they're small boxes, but over time, as you keep buying them, they accumulate.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're, like, out of space. So how do you deal with that?
Well, at first I used to do boxes, but then I noticed that the boxes would break down. They would just fold. So
you get all messed up.
Yeah. So I just started putting them in plastic bands.
Those seem to work a lot better than the boxes.
Yeah, I mean, the plastic bands kind of, you know, have their own little, they kind of fold too, or not fold, but, you know, kind of if they're heavy, so you just can't put too much in them, you know, when you stack them on top of each other. But I prefer plastic bands over boxes, because boxes seem to break down after a while, and then it just ruins the box.
Yeah, you know? whatever's like inside. And then it also prevents it like getting water damage too.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I had a flood one time, and a lot of stuff got wet, and some didn't, but it was because some of it was in plastic bags.
Yeah.
But which I was shocked. I thought that still it would somehow soak through.
Mm-hmm.
But the plastic bags kind of saved some of it, and the stuff that weren't in plastic bags that were in the boxes just got totally wet, and basically had to take everything out and try to dry the boxes, but a lot of it got ruined.
Yeah. Imagine your boxes, they're all soaked, and you haven't been able to go to your storage or your garage where you have them. And finally, like, you start opening, and there's, like, plants growing inside of it because all the moist, all that water, mildew.
Mildew and mold and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'd even want to keep that after that. That's his health issues right there.
Yeah. Do you keep the boxes, or do you tend to just kind of toss the boxes and to consolidate space?
Sometimes I'll keep them. I'll just put the model in there, and maybe just stack like two or three models in each one or something.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of separate them with some kind of like cloth or something. But the majority of the time, I tend to throw them away.
Yeah. And do you see it sometimes, like when you go to a convention, like a problem when you go to a vendor and everything he's selling is like just cheap, like $5 a box kit, $10, because you know you're going to just buy a bunch of them. Like, do you ever think of like, man, I'm already running out of space back home. Like, where am I going to put all these?
Yeah, basically just gotta buy another bed and trying to find a spot for it.
Yeah.
In the garage or whatever.
Find a spot to hide them?
Yeah.
Dang. So, I know, like, some years back, for the listeners that don't know, some years back, Randall lived in Japan. And when you were in Japan, what kind of kits were you buying? Like, what brands were you buying while you were there?
Well, my favorite kit was Tamiya. I was buying a lot of the, like, the tuner stuff, or just whatever cars I like Silvia, Supra, Toyota, Honda, whatever, you know, at that time. And I also did like the anime. So I was buying like Gundam, Evangelion, stuff like that. Never got a chance to build any of it, but I started on one, but this I never finished it. The ones that are, but yeah, majority of it was Tamiya.
Yeah, was your space like limited there as far as like you're buying all these kits and you know?
Yeah, I just had a little closet and that was it.
Yeah, just pushing them, cramming them in there?
Yeah, just kind of stacking everything in there. But at that time, it was boxes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, there was no bins at that moment.
No. I think there was bins, but over there, I don't think they have big bands in Japan. They were just small bands.
Yeah.
For little things. So I would usually buy the small ones to store, like the little parts, like the
like a tackle box kind of thing?
No, kind of like a small little band where you could just put stuff in it. They also had tin bands, like tins, that I was getting too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So at first I got the tin ones, and then I got some plastic ones. They kind of worked like tackle boxes. It would flip around, and it would have little squares or long squares or short squares. And then you could just stick all your stuff. So I'd stick all whatever pieces I got that they had there, like the wheels, or if they had like steering wheels or whatever they were selling separately. Like they would, I know that some of the kits, they would like break them down and sell like the certain pieces. And sometimes I would just buy them because they're a really good, cheap price. So like maybe $3 or $4 I'd spend for the wheels and tires, and maybe they might have like a little steering wheel or something, and it's dirt cheap. So I would just get all that little stuff, throw it in the bins.
Damn, that's tight. So did you go more to like the mom and pop shops, or to the big, like more of the bigger, like three, like six story buildings?
Oh yeah. So I used to go to like, there was a couple of mom and pop stores, which I liked, because if you're looking for the older model kits, that was really close to us. I would go to those to find the older stuff. But if you're looking for the newer stuff, they would have it too, but the other stores would have a bigger quantity of it. So it would most likely be there. So I'd be going to like Tokyo Hands, Yellow Submarine, or I don't know what the other names of the other ones were. I don't remember. But I think there was a couple other spots I used to go to that were really big with models. But the biggest two that I would go to was Tokyo Hands, because Tokyo Hands had one big section for models, but it was like, you know, everything robots and cars and whatever else there was. And but I mean, if you really, really wanted to find different stuff, the best place to go is Yellow Submarine, because every floor was different. One floor is cars, one floor is robots, one floor is statues that you would paint yourself, and whatever hobby you were in, it had its own floor, it seemed like. I think one time I went through all the floors just to see. I don't know if it's like that anymore, but when I went to Yokohama, that's where I would go to that one right there, those two, Tokyo Hands and Yellow Submarine.
Yeah. Did you notice, was there kind of like a crew or like a community amongst like the people that were there, like over time? Did you ever notice like there was like a scene? But I mean, like everybody kind of is like together in on this, or everyone's just kind of, they go in there to get their stuff and everyone goes their own way?
I never really noticed. Just because, you know, I was always on base. So there was a couple of us that would build models on base, a couple of guys, and we'd build them. But I don't know if there was like a huge scene for it. I'm pretty sure there was.
Yeah.
I remember one time I was walking home, and places like the trash was just kind of laid out in like a little spot. And I noticed that there was a model in there. And I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. Like, there's somebody building one.
Yeah. Someone threw it away?
Yeah. Well, I think it was just a box.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it was just a box that I saw.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's cool. Someone's building it here, but I don't know where, you know. But, I mean, there has to be people building them or they wouldn't be selling it, you know. But, I'm pretty sure there's a community. Just it probably wasn't well known until now because of the whole, you know, internet.
Mm-hmm.
If the internet was like it is now, with the whole media stuff, you know, like Instagram and everything, I'd probably know more about it.
Yeah, like back in that day when you were out there.
Yeah, Yeah, because I wasn't out there until like 96 to 2000.
Yeah. Damn.
So, yeah. So,
it's a big, big jump.
Yeah.
Man, what if, like, have you ever thought about going back, like, now, you know?
Oh,
like, God, if you had the opportunity now, like, how would you go? Would you take a lot of money or pack, like, three suitcases? What would you do?
Yeah, I would pack three suitcases. I would see if some of my friends still live there, which I know, I'm pretty sure one of them does, because he said he never wanted to leave. That was on base. Yeah. But, I would try to find him and be like, hey, ship this stuff back for me on base, you know? Like,
yeah.
do it very slow mail, you know? So it's very cheap. But, yeah, I would love to go back, and I would love to buy the kits that they have now.
Yeah, when I was there in November, I did get to go to a Yellow Submarine. And okay. I remember you telling me about that. You were telling me, hey, when you're out there, check to see if you find it. You know, send me a picture. And I remember just walking around the Akihabara station, like all in that center area there.
Uh-huh.
You know, Jeffries was taking us to all the different locations there. And we end up going to I just saw a building and it was a hobby store. It was at night, so I couldn't really see any. It wasn't like lit up like all the other buildings from the outside. I remember just walking in there and you're going through all the different floors and you're just noticing, you know, stuff. It's like a huge mall and so many different vendors. It's like this crazy, like, indoor swap meet kind of vibe. And like everything is in there. And it's cool because you get to see so much different stuff. Like, you see how people geek out and they nerd out on something different than what you do, you know, but still everybody like respects each other, you know, and because we all know we're onto like some kind of hobby.
Right.
And so it's like, if you're going in there and you're buying a bunch of stuff, you know, like, it's not like you're going to feel weird. Like, it's okay. Like, you could splurge and spend as much as you want. It's all here. That's what it's for. For you to enjoy. So, yeah, I just remember, you know, buying some stuff when we leave. And I tell Jeffries, hey, is there a Yellow Submarine we can go to? And this is like after we're walking like 10, 15 minutes later. And he's like, are you serious? I'm like, what? We were just there. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, we were just at Yellow Submarine. And I was like, that was Yellow Submarine? And then I thought of you. I was like, dang. And I felt bad because, you know, I didn't get no picture or anything. And you were already telling me, like, you know, if you go, get a picture for me.
Yeah.
So I wasn't able to get that picture. But I do remember going in there. And, yeah, I mean, I definitely want to go back for sure, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I mean, it would be nice if you can go as well. You know, I think from talking over with the guys, we're kind of thinking of maybe June. I mean, not June, November. Sorry. November of this year to go back. Uh-huh. But if we find out that there's something else going on earlier in the year, things can change, but who knows? But so far, we kind of have everything in thoughts for November, you know. And while you were in Japan, was there ever any like conventions you attended, or like model shows, swap meets, anything like that?
There used to be some swap meets on base. I forget, they used to call it a certain word, But for the most part,
the ones you go to the ones here.
Yeah, the ones here.
Yeah, like in the U.S.
Oh yeah, I've gone to all kinds.
All kinds of conventions.
Yeah, I've San Diego Comic Con, Star Wars Celebration, you name it. I've probably gone to it, except the ones in the East Coast or Midwest or whatever. But yeah, majority of them here in California, I've probably gone to them.
Yeah, and while you go to these like the conventions, it's crazy because, I mean, with Randall, I for the most part when I go to a show or something, we both live in Oxnard. We're not too far from each other, so for the most part, whenever I head out to LA, so it's an hour out from here, it's, you know, it's always nice when you bring someone with you, you know? I mean, going by yourself is fine, but it's always cool when you got someone to go with. So I would always hit up Randall and be like, hey, you want to go to the show? And you want to go here? Let's go there. And it's always nice, but I always trip out. Like, when we go to a show and there's vendors selling stuff, I'm looking over everything, trying to scan everything. And later, I start to overlook things, and I'm like, where's Randall, you know? Like, we walk in together, and then we kind of like, where is he at? I look back, and he's still, like, in the beginning, and I'm already, like, maybe on the fifth booth looking at stuff, but I didn't find anything. And later, Randall comes back with, like, hey, look what I found. He always finds, like, some neat things where I would least even expect to find. So what's like, the secret, you know, like, digging per se?
I usually just look at everything. I don't I know that most people, like, when I usually hunt, they leave me because I can stand in a booth for like 30 minutes just because I want to see every little thing that they have in there. I don't care. I don't just look at the stuff on the table, because most people look at the stuff on the table and they see the boxes like, ah, and they leave.
they just go,
yeah, like, I don't want to look at that. It's probably just junk because it's not on the table. But the majority of the time, I find the stuff that's in the boxes. And then the stuff in the boxes are usually the cheaper stuff than the stuff that are on the table. So I just look through everything. I look through every box. I look through whatever. If I see something behind them, I'm like, hey, can I check that out? What's over there? You know, like, I'm not afraid to ask questions. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not going to ask, or don't be afraid to ask. Like, if you see something, and even if you think it's expensive, don't be afraid to ask. It's barter. I kind of learned that with Edgar.
You know, yeah, get,
at first, I used to be afraid to barter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to be afraid to barter, and then I would watch Edgar do it. I'd be like, oh my God, like, what the heck? Like, I'm paying, like, sometimes full price for stuff, or I get it for a little cheaper, but I'm like, he's bartering, and I never even thought of doing that.
Yeah, and, well, like, for that, it's, you know, like, you see something that's like $40, let's say, or 30. And I mean, at the same time, you don't want to like disrespect the seller and be like, hey, I'll give you 10, I'll give you 20. You know, like that just seems very drastic.
Yeah.
Considering that they're paying a fee for the booth. And I mean, you can't assume like, oh, they're making a killing, you know? I mean, they paid full price or half or whatever they came up, you know, that later they decided to sell. But if you're buying, like, if you're going to a booth and let's say you see like 5-8 items that you want, you know, I feel like right there you can talk to the seller and ask if they can give you like a break. You know, you can barter there because you're buying a lot, and most of them will. But if they can't, and if you know that that's really like a respectable price, then, and you're buying a lot, then don't, you know, you don't have to like ask, because then it's like you already know that's how much, that's already cheap enough that you're going to get it. But if it's, let's say, $40, you know, and you're only going to buy one thing or two things, don't be afraid to like ask to see if they'll drop it down like $5, you know, per kit or whatever. But I think once it starts to get to like 10, 20, that's too much.
Yeah.
To be, you know, it's like, yeah, just give it to me for free.
Yeah, basically. Like, normally I would just say, you know, what's the best you can do for me?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they'll be like, oh, I could take this much off. All right, cool. You know?
Yeah.
I don't, yeah, like you said, I don't try to go down. I don't try to barter them down. But I just ask, like, what's the best you could do for me? Like, can you lower it anymore? You know, what can you do for me?
Yeah.
And a lot of the guys, well, and like you said, some are like, nah, I can't because I basically, this is what I paid for it.
Yeah.
I'm just getting the money back that I paid for it. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, you could either take it or you can't. But a lot of the times too, like if I know it's a good price, I'll grab it. If I think it's kind of high, I'll wait to see if someone else has it for lower, because it's happened in the past where I've like, oh man, yeah, I want this. All right, cool. It's not that bad of a price. But then I go, you know, to the next row of booths and bam, the other guy's got it cheaper.
Yeah.
But
what about when you go, oh, I'll wait, I'm going to go see who has it cheaper. And then you come back and it's gone and no one else had it.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that too. So like, so there are the times where you say that and you lose it. You know, you go, oh no, no one else had it. All right, I'll go back to the booth. Bam, it's gone. So it's a hit miss. It's a 50-50 chance.
Yeah, you're taking a gamble in that moment.
Yeah, are you gonna get it or are you not? I mean, if you really want it and that's what you're looking for, I would just grab it if you think it's a good price. If you think it's kind of high, the guy won't go down, but if you want to get it, but you're like, oh, let me see if I can find it cheaper, then you can take that chance if it's not going to be there. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, I've learned.
Is this a hit and miss? I've done it many times as a collector, and I always say, oh, I'm not going to do that again, but I still do it. You know?
No, yeah, I've learned my lesson a lot of times out of like many shows we've gone to in the past.
Yeah.
And it sucks, that feeling of you have it in your hands, you know, and you're like, how much is it? And they give you the price and you're kind of hesitant because you just got there too, but you want to look around to see what's up. And you're kind of like, oh, I'll be back. And then you take off and you do the round and you come back because you didn't see it. And you're like, all right, now my mind is set on that item. I want to get it. And you go and it's gone. So now I'm like, I'm pulling the trigger. Like, I'm getting that thing, you know. Even because I tend to think, like, if I don't get it,
someone else will.
Like, someone else will. But that's something I've been looking for or wanting, you know, to get. And how am I going to leave this area without it?
Yeah,
like it's right, like it was right there, you know. This thing needs to go to a new home, basically. So it's but now I've learned my lesson. I've had many regrets where I'm like, oh man, I should have done it and I didn't.
Yeah,
and
I still do it.
No, but you always get lucky though, you always end up finding it later.
Yeah, I always get lucky and find it again,
you know.
But lately, a lot of stuff I have not found. It's just, the market is rough right now.
Yeah. No, yeah.
So, but I just chalk it down as, you know, later on someone's going to want to sell that and I might get it at a cheaper price. Hopefully it don't go up. But, you know, if it does, it does. It don't, you know, I got it.
Yeah.
And I always figure like the newer stuff's going to come out and someone else is going to want the newer stuff. And they're like, I'll just get rid of this to get this. And that's how I get it sometimes. I always get lucky and find it. It could take a year. It could take 5 years. But I seem to get it, like you said, yeah. I seem to get lucky and get it.
Yeah, what kind of, at the moment, like, at the shows, like, what model kits or are you mostly after? Is it just, like muscle cars? Like, the Model Ts?
I like Gifters, some muscle cars, and I like the older cars, like the 30s and 40s. Those are kind of what I'm into.
Yeah.
So like coupes and Model Ts and any little crazy thing that, you know, they make, they kind of mash up with them. I like, I'm into Dodges, some of the Fords and Chevys, whatever. I mean, if I like I mostly like the trucks.
Yeah. But, is there a year in particular that you like?
I like 29 to the 40s mm-hmm. in the trucks. Some of the Fords and the Chevys. But and for the muscle cars, I like the 70s. And I like a lot of the older stuff for the drifters. Like my big thing is I like the La Supra. Mm-hmm. That's my car. I always liked the last Supra they made, the 86. That was always my favorite Supra. I wish I could have got it, but I never did. But that thing has gone up in so much. So even a used one is like 20 grand now. So I think the most wanted car right now.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
That's what I thought. Right now, when you said 20 grand, I thought you were talking about a model car. I was like, damn.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, the real car. But
yeah,
for like that, yeah, I like the Supras. Like for the model cars, I like the Supras and the Hondas and Toyotas. And, I like the GTRs, Civics, stuff like that.
Dang.
The older ones, too, the ones that are kind of boxy.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, I like those a lot.
Yeah.
Those are nice. Those are the ones that are getting my attention. Like the box art just sells me. Just seeing them, I'm like, oh, I want it.
Yeah, they just look so cool, especially when you lower them. And I remember back in the day when those were lowered, like they were pretty awesome.
Yeah, are you still into the Bozo cars?
I like the Bozo cars. I tripped out like when I lived over there, what they did with them.
Yeah,
pretty wild. Tripping out, like how do they even drive with those things? I mean, like pipes.
Yeah, yeah. For
high and fenders and you know that are sticking out. Like, how do you not hit the other car in front of you? Like, you can't even see like the bottom of the you know like the grill. That's the where the bumper is, and the bumper's extended like 10 feet. And like, how do these people not hit other cars? You know,
yeah.
It just trips me out. Or like the spoilers. Like, I'm kind of exaggerating, but it's like 20 feet in the air. Like, it's crazy. Like,
it's really big.
How do you see behind you? Like,
yeah.
But I always tripped out what they did with those, especially with the vans. I always liked their vans. How they customize those things are pretty awesome too. We used to go to the Yokohama Bridge and see the cars. You know, over there they would kind of display. It's sort of like a car show here, like over the weekend, we used to go there and check out the cars, trucks, and vans, whatever they had over there. And it was pretty awesome. It was like a little car show. Everybody, you know, show their stuff.
Everyone's all like busting out.
Yeah. It's like if you ever went to like a car race here in the States where I don't hear about them anymore, but like when they used to do them in LA, they used to do them in our area and Camarillo. Used to be a spot where everybody would park all the muscle cars or tuners or whatever, and they would all park and open their hoods and everybody would be talking, and yeah, and this guy, oh, pink slip for this or money, or I'll give you money, this and that. And then there was a spot where everybody would race. I remember those times. It was pretty cool. But I don't hear about it, and maybe it might still be a thing, but I don't know anything about it anymore. I remember the races in LA, going over there too.
Dang, yeah, I'm pretty sure that scene's still alive. It's just,
yeah,
it's probably very underground.
Yeah,
it'd have to be. Yeah, I'm sure if we looked for it, we can find it.
I'm pretty sure it's
around here too, around our area. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure there's still guys that kind of do that.
Yeah,
it was funny because they all used to go to In-N-Out, eat over there. And then go to that one spot where everybody used to park. And then everybody's like, all right, we're going to do the race. And then all the cars would go over there. It always figured, like, why doesn't the cops follow us from where we are to the area, but never any cops around at that time. And then, bam, you go over there, do it. And then somebody was narking on somebody at the time, because I needed, some cop would come by and everybody scatter like in the Fast and the Furious, like, bam, everywhere.
Dang. I wonder how many people, like, crashed in each other trying to leave.
I didn't really see anybody crash into each other.
Some fender benders backing up. Bam.
Yeah, like, or going forward and hitting each other because everybody's trying to get out.
Yeah, no, yeah, everyone's scrambling, trying to get out of there. And yeah, going back to the Bozo cars, for those that don't know, if you go on YouTube, you could just search Bozo Cars Japan, or even on just Google it, and you'll see these cars of what Randall was describing. You know, they have these very exaggerated body kits, spoilers, and at the same time, like, their exhaust system, they just do these very creative design with the pipes. Yeah. Where it's not just one, it's like three pipes, four, like, on each side, just sticking high up in the air. And I've seen some of those cars as well, being built as a model. They look cool, like, interesting and crazy. You know, the good thing about Japan is they don't have speed bumps or that much debris on the floor. A very clean street, so these guys can go as low as they want and not have to worry about hitting any bumps, because that front body kit, or even the sides, would just rip. I think it would just rip off if they hit a bump.
Yeah, you just really got to watch out when you go into places, because when I had my little lowrider over there, and all I did was just cut my, I cut my coils at first, and then I got some, what was it? What kind of coils was it? It was the, what is that racing called? Oh man, I can't remember the rally. So I got the rally springs, and that, oh man, it was awesome, man, because you would get a little bounce, but they weren't as crazy as you did when you cut them, because there's just bouncing for days. Well, with the rally ones, it would maybe bounce like three times, like a nice soft bounce. But the when you cut them, man, they just blah, blah, blah,
you don't stop.
They don't stop. Yeah, they just slam it to the ground.
You're like in a jolly jumper.
Yeah, because you kind of just messed up the coils anyway. So, you know, like, they have a ton of spring on it. But I remember one time getting stuck because I kind of went straight. I didn't go on an angle. And I was like, oh, man.
Were you just like teeter-tottering back and forth?
I just kind of grinded it back.
Shoot.
There was nothing I could do. I didn't know anybody. I was by myself, and I wasn't going to push it out to the street. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to kind of just go back and forth a little. And then when I feel like, and then I just kind of got that little nudge that loosened it, and bam, I got out, and then I kind of went to the side.
And
it worked.
Did you ever try to bring that car back home?
No, the car kind of got really messed up.
Yeah.
the reverse, it was grinded for somehow. I don't know. Could have been a friend that I let borrow it. And he didn't say anything, but the...
Here you go.
the in reverse, it wouldn't go in reverse anymore. So it was cheaper just to junk it than to fix it.
Yeah.
And I even got paid, which was crazy. So, like, when you junk cars over there, they actually pay you. Instead of, you know, over here, you got to pay them. Over there, you can, they pay you. I think they gave me, like, $250 because I had nice rims and a stereo system in it.
Yeah. We'll take this, sir.
Yeah, so they just gave me $250. I was like, I don't even think I paid $500 for it.
Wow. And,
yeah, I was... It was a good price that I got it for. I mean, you can get really good cars over there for a decent price and then really fix them up, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was like an 80 Honda Civic or something.
Damn, you're all peeling out or what?
No, I never tried to peel out. Yeah.
With all the model kits in the back seat?
Yeah. They're slamming all over the place.
Damn. That's cool, man. Yeah, so the where can the listeners buy the plastic bins for the for storage for the models? What's the best place to get them?
Well, I usually just get them at Target or, you know, anywhere that sells plastic bins. I mean, it all depends on what you want, what you're looking for.
Yeah, because they got the clear ones that are see-through plastic, right. And then they have the ones that are a little more just dark color, like private, where you can't even see what's inside.
Yeah, and I usually tend to get the plastic ones.
The clear ones?
That are clear. Okay. Yeah. You were saying that, you know, because the sun and all that, which I didn't even think of, it starts to fade still. So I was like, damn, maybe I should have started getting the ones. I mean, some of mine are the ones that are covered. They're just a solid color, but I'm thinking that I might start getting just solid colors. And for stuff that I don't really care for, I'll just put it in the clear ones. But, I mean, I have all different kinds of sizes. I have big ones, medium-sized ones, small ones, ones that have little pockets in them, you know, square, long square, whatever, you know, to store whatever I need to store in it. It's whatever you prefer or whatever you know, are looking for, what you need. But I tend to get I'm not trying to get the bigger ones in. I'm trying to get the smaller size ones because it just gets heavy when you put too much stuff in it, too.
Yeah, no, heck yeah. trying to carry like 30 pounds of plastic model kits.
Or more,
maybe like 80 pounds, actually.
Yeah, this depends how many you can fit in there.
Yeah, I just trip out on that, how it's you know, you go to the store, you get a model, it's like a small box, and it's really light, and then you come home and, you know, you put it away and you start just stacking them. Next thing you know, you have so many. You're like, I need to put them somewhere. I don't like how they're all spread out. You know,
yeah.
I put them in these bins and they fill up quick. And the next thing you know, you're like, all right, now I need to put it in the garage or in the storage shed or whatever. And it's like, you know, it's all heavy.
Yeah, it's like, damn. Not plastic. Have three kits in here. Why is it so heavy?
Yeah. And then you start like storing plastic and plastic.
Yeah. That used to be a running joke of ours. That we used to have plastic. So like whatever you collected, like at that time, I used to collect a lot of figures. So it was like plastic figures and plastic bubbles and plastic bands.
So it's like a plastic baggie.
Yeah, or in a plastic baggie, whatever you put in, sandwich bag, or those ones that you could buy, or those clamshells. Everything's plastic now. I just remember that we made it up one time: plastic.
Not plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, stuff's crazy, but it's addicting.
Yeah. I kind of noticed there's a couple of hashtags that are plastic addict or plastic addiction. It's everything out there now.
Everything, dude. It's out there, man.
Oh, yeah. It's like when you open a new pack of cards, you're like, it's weird how you smell them. You're like, oh, man, it's that same smell, but it smells good.
Yeah. Do you think all these years of playing Tetris has helped with storing your model kits?
Oh, yeah. It was just actually funny that you said that, because at work we were doing something in this, and this guy was stacking boxes on there. And I'm like, oh, put it like this. And he's like, oh, you play Tetris, huh? Oh, well, yeah, but I didn't want to tell him that I have a storage full of stuff, you know, that I'm constantly having to stop. Like, when I want to look for something in the stores, I got to take it all out and then put it back in. It's like a 2-3 hour process.
Yeah, it's you probably already, for you, it's more like an art form, too, the way you, like, store everything.
Yeah, I try to store it so it's nice and neat, and so I try to put the heavy stuff on the bottom and the lighter stuff on top. So it doesn't crush it. Yeah.
So you have a system. basically.
Yeah, I kind of have a system. I try to keep the heavier stuff on the bottom and the lighter stuff on the top. And then I try to keep the same boxes, the same size boxes, so I could stack it up nice and neat. But then there's those times where they're just not. So then it's like a Tetris game, you know, you're putting one next to the other one. And then
Damn, so you get it all in there.
Yeah, just to get it all in there nice and neat so it's not on the ground. And then a lot of my stuff's on pallets. So just in case it does rain or something does happen, like I remember one time at my storage, they were saying that, oh, yeah, hey, just to let you know, we had a little water leak over here, and we're not sure if your storage got any water in there. And I'm like, all right, cool. And so I went in there. I didn't see anything. But I think even if it was, it wouldn't have touched it because some spots have like one or two pallets high. So
damn, they're stacked.
I don't stack anything on the ground.
Yeah.
I learned my lesson with that. So I got pallets and I just stack them up. And hopefully the water doesn't get any higher than that. But I mean, the water could get soaked on the pallet and go straight up on the pallet into the, you know, because I do have a lot of boxes still.
Yeah.
That I store stuff in, but.
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what do you do? There's nothing you can really do if it happens.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing. There's nothing you can do. So
no.
What are some recommendations and some final words for our listeners around the world as far as, like, you know, storing and buying? Some final words for, you know, keeping the skill model hobby alive.
Well, if you're going to store it, I would probably definitely store it in plastic bands. The boxes are just going to later on crumble, and then you might actually break the models if they also, you know, get crushed. If you have five or six, you know, boxes on top of each other, they're probably just going to start to crumble and just, and then you never know, like, you can start breaking the plastic or bending it, whatever, you know. That's my recommendation. I mean, that's what I like to do ever since I started collecting. I've trying to get away from the boxes, take it out of the boxes and put it in plastic bands. It's a pricey thing, but I mean, if you want to keep it nice and clean, you know, no dents, no nothing, don't want to break them, I would probably do it that way. I mean, if you have the space. If you don't, you know, then maybe just, you know, stack the boxes on top of each other, you know, just the model boxes. And put a little shelf or something, you know, but just not on the ground, just in case something happens with water. You don't have to worry about that. Maybe a shelf or two high, and then just stack them on there.
Just keep stacking away.
Like paint. Yeah, I would not keep in your house.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like,
that's not good.
I would keep that in a separate area. I usually tend to keep what we have for, you know, like drawing or whatever we do for my daughter. We try to keep that in the garage. So, you know, all those fumes and everything's are not in our house. You know, we don't have all those chemicals.
But yeah, being spread out, being exposed, especially while you're sleeping. Yeah,
exactly. Especially if you have other chemicals that are in the house that, you know.
Yeah.
Cleaning supplies and all that.
Dang, well, you heard it there, everyone, from Randall. And I want to thank him for being on the show. Definitely going to hear back from him again, future shows. And stay tuned, and thank you for listening.
Thank you.